That commercial for PermaSeal just reminds me that I'm on the condo board and we need to get some concrete work done on the outside. The sidewalk that runs parallel to our building is tipping in. So when it rains or snows, the water runs towards the building, down the wall. We could have a problem down the road. We don't have water in our basement yet, but we've decided to be proactive and bust up that concrete and get it replaced. I don't know anything about getting concrete busted up and replaced.
It's a great thought, though.
Thank you,
Andy. Getting it taken care of. Being proactive. I like to see that.
So we went ahead and got that done, or we're getting that done. So so now I'm in charge of getting a contractor, a concrete, so I'm calling concrete guys throughout Chicagoland. And it's been a real eye-opener because one guy comes up, and they're all great guys. I want to give them all a little bit of our business. We have a budget to spend. The first guy just comes up, and he just looks at it and goes, $9,500. I thought, even if that's the right price, fake it. Just
exactly.
Do a little more song and dance,
they
man.
They got a calculator or something.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Get out a tape measure. But he just goes, yeah, $9,500, which to me is like him going, you know, my kid's tuition at U of I next semester is $9,500. Boom, problem solved. That's exactly what it felt like. Other guys come out and they tape measure things, and then they say you've got to do this one or that one, and so I'm in a position to decide something for the building that I don't feel entirely qualified for, although the more we do this, the better I get, I will say that. Is that Lou Manfredini on line one? All right. I wasn't going to call you about this because I don't want our friendship to be me asking you for professional favors, Lou Manfredini.
I feel an obligation to the rest of your condo building because you are going to needlessly waste their money.
$9,500.
You just talked about PermaSeal, yeah. And I have a question. The concrete that you're speaking of,
yeah.
Is it in fine shape other than the fact that it's dipping the wrong way?
Looks brand new.
Okay. So PermaSeal, our fine sponsors,
yeah.
Offer a system called PolyLevel. They can come and lift said concrete as you see it right now,
yeah.
And put it in the right position for probably less than half of $9,500.
Wow. Because it's leaning right in, the water goes right in, it goes down the wall into the basement, and then you get all kinds of problems, and the building will fall down.
They use a polyurethane, and they'll drill a small hole, and with the polyurethane, they literally can put it back into place.
Wow.
And you can walk on it in 2 hours.
They should advertise that on the radio.
They do. You just don't listen. 800-421-SEAL. Have a great day.
That's our Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini, who's been charged with monitoring my every utterance at all times.
I guess he told you.
No, he told America. Thank you for that, Mr. Fix-It. So, trending today is Joaquin Phoenix's speech last night. And I don't mind big-time celebrities taking the opportunity to state their case for their cause. I mean, really, do you want to see them thank their agent? It's nice if they reflect on the movie and what it means, an opportunity that Renee Zellweger completely ignored. I mean, whatever Judy Garland's messages, whatever the moral of the Judy Garland story is, and there are many, she had no interest in that. We'll get to that in a minute. But then here comes Joaquin Phoenix. And you know, he's kind of a tortured soul. What did Dean describe him as? Nutty or something like that, or different? But yeah, he is. Listen, do you want to see people like me in movies? No. You want to see people who are artists do really amazing things. That's what movies are. So I have no problem with Joaquin Phoenix professionally or personally. I think he's a good actor when he's on screen. You and I couldn't have done that Joker thing. So now he's going to come up and he's going to give his speech. Joaquin cut one.
The opportunity to use our voice for the voiceless. I've been thinking a lot about some of the distressing issues that we are facing collectively. And I think at times we feel or we're made to feel that we champion different causes. But for me, I see commonality. I think whether we're talking about gender inequality or racism or queer rights or indigenous rights or animal rights, we're talking about the fight against injustice. We're talking about the fight against the belief that one nation, one people, one race, one gender, or one species has the right to dominate, control, and use and exploit another with impunity.
And the crowd kind of pauses, and then they start clapping. They go, okay, we're going to go there. Give us a minute to digest that. But all right, yeah, there's something to that. Just because you're the top of the food chain doesn't mean you should take complete advantage of that. It's kind of a liberal Hollywood artsy feel on life on Earth. I'm okay with that. Now, you could go a lot of different directions with that, and he cited some of them. This is his main thesis in 5 seconds. Cut two.
Many of us, what we're guilty of is an egocentric worldview, the belief that we're the center of the universe.
One time, Senator from Minnesota said, we all do better when we all do better. Paul Wellstone, if we all do better, we all do better. Just let's try and lift everybody up. Okay, so how are we going to do that? And this is where the ice got a little thin for Joaquin. Cut three.
We go into the natural world and we plunder it for its resources. We feel entitled to artificially inseminate a cow. And when she gives birth, we steal her baby, even though her cries of anguish are unmistakable. And then we take her milk that's intended for her calf and we put it in our coffee and our cereal.
I wouldn't have started there. Right. So if I want to talk about the injustices in the world or how we're not all given an equal shot, I get that point. I've heard that expressed before. I don't really think about it much. I had cereal yesterday. I'll have cereal tomorrow. If I fix the world, that won't be way up on my laundry list of places I'm going to start. But OK, you know, that's OK. I mean, if not, put it this way. Where you got to be? It's already been a 3-hour and 15-minute show. If it's going to go 3:20, you're still watching TV. It didn't cost you anything. So that's where he is. And then this is Joaquin cut four.
We fear the idea of personal change because we think that we have to sacrifice something to give something up. But human beings at our best are so inventive and creative and ingenious. And I think that when we use love and compassion as our guiding principles, we can create, develop, and implement systems of change that are beneficial to all sentient beings and to the environment. I've been a scoundrel in my life. I've been selfish. I've been cruel at times, hard to work with, and ungrateful. But so many of you in this room have given me a second chance. And I think that's when we're at our best, when we support each other, not when we cancel each other out for past mistakes, but when we help each other to grow, when we educate each other, when we guide each other towards redemption. That is the best of humanity.
So that's a TED Talk. You know, he chose winning the Oscar to give it, but it all makes sense. None of us are perfect, but we can do better if we're kind and forgiving. So that was sort of the takeaway to me. And if you get hung up on the, wait, we can't drink cow's milk thing, I think you're missing the larger message. And it's too bad he used that example as maybe the specific thing that he brought up. It's 9:27. So on my scale of 1 to 23 jujubes, I'm giving Joaquin Phoenix's speech last night 20. I was open to it. In fact, I would have been disappointed if he had thanked his agent. Hey, John, how about some recognition to Maya and Kristen? Much funnier than Chris and Steve. I thought most of the teams that came up and did shtick last night were pretty dang funny. John, that cow thing makes perfect sense to me, but this texter from 847 said, how many of these clowns have on leather shoes, diamonds from conflict areas, take meds, and use products tested on animals? It's Hollywood hypocrisy. Somebody else said, why didn't you play the last thing he said about his late brother?
When he was 17, my brother wrote this lyric. He said, run to the rescue with love and peace will follow. Thank you.
The Chicago Sun-Times endorses Kim Fox. They'll tell us why.
Wow, I just left Home Depot on North Avenue, and there was 3 dogs there. And I thought to myself, what's going on here?
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
I don't understand why people... I have a dog, I love my dog, but I'm not bringing him to Home Depot. Leave your dog at home.
The party was nice, the party was...
Pete McMurray called in on our show a few weeks ago when this really sort of hit the airwaves and pressed pretty hard. It was that in the fall, and it just seemed like we were all noticing for the first time that people were bringing their dogs and cats, their dogs, into restaurants, bars, stores. We got into the rules and regulations about what should, you can lose that for us, Ella, what the rules and regulations of that should be. P was pretty good over the weekend, though, on social media. He was saying that they ought to give an Oscar to that lady who was doing the Korean language interpretation. Mm-hmm. She did a real nice job. Our Mega Monday morning quiz, by the way, we're going to do this at 11:40. Our friends from MegaPros have a little quiz that we do, and it's always about something in Chicago or Illinois.
Okay.
So this week's theme is Chicago and Illinois politicians. I'll just sample one of them for you. You ready?
Yep.
And they're all so famous that I don't think it's difficult. I'll give you an easy one. This former governor conspired to commit pay-to-play schemes, including an attempt to fill the vacant U.S. Senate seat of then-President-elect Barack Obama. He was busted on tape as he ranted, "I'm not just going to give this thing up for nothing."
That would be Rod Blagojevich.
Yes, that's very good, Andy.
Thank you very much.
After removal from office, the clue continues, he maintained his innocence throughout appearances on The Late Show with David Letterman and Celebrity Apprentice before heading off to federal prison in Littleton, Colorado. I was thinking about that, and I don't remember exactly how that happened. I mean, we've thrown him out because of all of this, but he's not in jail yet. So he goes on The View. He's still doing Celebrity Apprentice. He goes on with David Letterman, and I do remember when he went on with David Letterman.
Why exactly are you here? Honest to God. What?
Well, you know that I've been wanting to be on your show in the worst way for the longest time.
Well, you're on in the worst way, believe me.
You started off that way. That was the great thing about Letterman. Even when you were a guest and he was nice to you, he still got in those digs.
Oh, yeah.
Letterman never pulled a punch. He went ahead and threw it, but it was kind of subtle. Oh, you're on in the worst way. You're going to jail. Blago looked great. His hair was dark. And he was still the chirpy, chippy Blago that got him elected a couple of times. You could see his appeal, his charm. Like, literally, he's getting ready to go to jail. You're going to go to federal penitentiary. You will not see your daughters graduate from schools. And he was loving it. Not that part of it, but yeah. I mean, he was loving the limelight. Blago loved the limelight. And it was his undoing, in a way. So that would be one of the questions on our Mega Monday morning quiz. We'll do it at 11:40. If you get all 10 right, you will receive a Mega Pros hoodie. If you don't get all 10 right, you will receive a Mega Pros hoodie. So just call in and have fun with us. We'll see how well you know your Illinois politicians. We will do that at 11:40 this morning. More about the speeches at the Oscars last night. John, I don't know if you've already mentioned this, but Patty Blau, B-L-A-U, am I saying that right, was listed in the memoriam section of the Oscars last night. She was raised in Winnetka and was part of the class of New Trier East in 1973. I think the memoriam is one of the, I hate to say this, the best things they do. Billie Eilish sang a Beatles song, and it was just so nice. And they always leave somebody out, and then everybody always loses their mind about it. This year, it's Luke Perry, who is trending above on Twitter. Any of the other subjects relative to the Oscars last night? So Luke Perry fans are outraged. He was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, so he should, you know, so he is a current film actor, even though you don't think of him that way. And people notice it, and then they get upset, and off to the races we go.
Wasn't Robert Conrad left out, too?
I thought. Maybe so.
I think he died on Friday, maybe?
Yeah.
Who was the actor that got hit by a car the other day?
That was Orson Bean.
And they had Orson Bean in there.
Yeah, died Friday. And I think he died maybe the day before. Well, I don't know. It was very recently.
Right on the heels of it, right. And so the idea that, well, we didn't have time to get him in there doesn't wash, right?
No.
Because clearly they do have time to get these people in there. John, I appreciate your comments on Phoenix's speech. He is a vegan, and as such has compassion for all God's creatures. 847, though, said John Joaquin needs to visit a dairy farm. Somebody else said, I think his speech was right on, especially the information about the cows. Here we are talking about that. after his show, after the show last night. It's 9:44. Okay, so why then does the Sun-Times endorse Kim Fox for county attorney in Cook County? We'll find out from them after we start with a look at the forecast. Okay, it's 9:48 on WGN. Look at this from the Sun-Times. For the first time in decades, the state's attorney's office was employing an overarching and data-trusted crime-fighting strategy rather than just racking up convictions. And it was a strategy built on principles of social justice, making our streets safer without mindlessly filling up jails. They're talking in this editorial in the Sun-Times about Kim Fox's office and how they're not just putting anybody in jail because they ripped somebody off. They're going after a real crime. It's exactly what Fox had promised. Not that ripping somebody off for less than $1,000 isn't a crime, but they're prioritizing it. According to preliminary data from the University of Chicago Crime Lab, they write, the strategy is working. Our streets are, in fact, safer. Today, we strongly endorse Kim Fox in the Democratic primary for another term as Cook County State's Attorney. Whoever wins the primary, almost certainly in Cook County, is going to win the race. So really, they're saying Kim Fox gets to keep her job if they had their way. What about Smollett? They say Fox bundled that case. She really messed up. And we're not convinced her only mistake was, as she contends, a lack of transparency. We endorse her all the same. The editorial page editor at the Chicago Sun-Times is on line 7. Tom McNamee joins us again. Hi, Tom. You're hey, on John. WGN. Good morning.
Hey, John. Good to talk to you again.
Can we trust Kim Fox?
Can we trust her? That's a good question. I think we can. I think she's a person of integrity. You know, I'm expecting this endorsement to get some interesting reaction. And so far, John, it hasn't happened. I was expecting to see my email box filled up with people upset that we would endorse the person who let Jussie Smollett walk. And it hasn't happened. We're actually getting kind of the opposite, but that'll change. I'll hear from those people eventually. I think our view was there's a philosophy of justice that we believe in, which is we have to take bad people off the streets. We have to make people safer than we are. And we have to do it in a larger way that doesn't take low-level offenders, you know, like 19-year-old kids who are shoplifters, and put them in jail. Because, frankly, nobody comes out of jail a better citizen. And it's a tough balance, and I don't pretend that there isn't a tension between those two things. We could lock up everybody in the world, and our streets would be safer. But in the long run, I'm not sure those people wouldn't just be more dangerous than they are. So it's good, Mike, to make your question. Can we trust her? I think we can. I think what I'm saying is we trust the philosophy and we trust what she's done so far, except with Jussie Smollett.
Well, but see, that's
really
it.
Screwed up.
Right. Not only did she screw up, I mean, as you acknowledge, it was more than just a lack of transparency. I'm not sure that something more sinister than that wasn't happening there. And I'm also bothered by the fact that because it was embarrassing or worse, she was not honest with us. So if something happens again and those factors come into play and she deceives us again, you know, shame on, what is it? Shame on you if you fool me once. Shame on me if you fool me twice. So that's it. I don't care about Jussie Smollett, but I care about that.
I actually agree with you a lot. And one of the considerations we had in doing this was, when is Dan Webb going to come out with his report?
Yeah. He's the guy that's looking into this.
Yeah, because as you say, what happens if the report comes out and it shows a much deeper sort of cynicism and insider politics than we can imagine? That would make us look a little silly to endorse her if it's bad enough, right? On the other hand, I think there's a really good bet that Dan Webb is not going to come out with that report before March 17th, before the primary. He's a pro, and I think he knows he'd look like Jim Comey if he came out with that report just before the election. So we sort of have to go with what we know.
Editorial page editor at the Sun-Times, Tom McNamee, is on a phone line. Look, before we, maybe we don't need to spend any more time on the Jussie Smollett thing, but I'm a little intrigued by this idea. The threshold used to be, I think, $300. Now it's $1,000. If you steal for $999 in Chicago, we will not treat that as a felony theft. You'll still be in trouble for it, but not very much. What happens to those people that steal $800 worth of stuff from me or from a store?
Well, as you say, the problem is they don't charge until it's up to $1,000. prior to this, they would charge you at $300. Now, there is, once again, there is no 100% right or wrong here. One of the things I try to do as an editorial page director is try to get across the notion that there is no black and white. There is no absolute right and wrong. There's a question of trying to balance things. So in this particular case, I actually think it makes sense not to spend your resources, which are limited in Cook County, going after shoplifters up to $1,000, when you could be spending that time on people who are serious criminals with guns. The other reason for that is when they do the research, what you find out is that if you charge people who are shoplifters at the level of, say, $500 or $600, the store owners don't show up for court.
Yeah.
The store owners don't pursue it. They want to get the message out there, we don't tolerate shoplifters. So they call these, you know, they call the cops charge people. But the store owners, frankly, have gotten what they want. So what happens with so many of these charges under $1,000 is they get dropped because the witnesses don't show up.
Well, I don't know about that. All I know is what a message that sends to all of us, that if you steal $750 of stuff from me, we're going to treat that like it's nothing, because heaven forbid we put you in Cook County for a while and then you come out worse for it. I mean, that's an unintended consequence, but shouldn't there be some consequence for stealing from people?
What we have said in the past, actually, since you brought it up, we don't get into the – what we said in the past is $1,000 might be too high, $300 is too low, somewhere in the middle might be someplace there could be a compromise.
Okay, but that's a crazy conversation to me still. I mean, listen, I don't want to cut off our nose to spite our face. Let's not make things worse here. But really, you and I are now negotiating how much we're willing to let people steal from us before we do anything about it. That's crazy.
No, it's not crazy, John. We do it every day. That's what our laws do. You and I do that every day. You and I would both agree that you wouldn't put a guy in Cook County Jail for a $50 shoplifting. I think we'd both agree you wouldn't do it for $100. So at some point in each of our own minds, we are already making those decisions about where to draw the line.
Okay, so then, and rather than waste time and money and resources on that, she's going after gun crimes, more serious crimes, and at the end of the day, we are safer as a result, and that was her campaign promise, that's her initiative, and Tom, you're telling me that's working, right?
It's, you know what, I think it's working, it's really not working. You know, we give the examples, gun crimes have gone down in these specific communities where this gun crime unit has gone into effect. Violent crime in Chicago continues to go down. I don't think she gets all the credit or even most of the credit for that, but it happened on her watch. I don't see anything to say that the city's blowing up with more crimes than her. I see modest indications that it's going in the right direction, and I don't see the other folks as being an alternative to her.
If you do not already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper like the Chicago Sun-Times, the editorial page editor, Tom McNamee, is on a phone. Tom, I always enjoy your conversation.
Can I just say one thing, by the way? You know, as I was on the train when I got the call from your producer.
Yeah.
I just want to say how much I appreciate the fact you still do this. Do you know how few radio outlets nowadays, especially in AM, spend any time talking about local news in a thoughtful way like this? It just doesn't happen. So, for the record.
Well, I'm going to play that again on the radio someday, Tom. You keep doing what you do, my friend. Thank you for that.
All right. Take care. Are we all done?
Yes. The interview is over now, Tom. I'm hanging up on you.
See you later, John. Take care. Bye-bye.
Our producer, Elif Garris, is the world's biggest Billie Eilish fan. She was singing Billie's praise before you knew Billie could sing. And there she was last night with her black and green hair. And over this song, they did that slideshow, The In Memoriam. And some people were upset that some people weren't included. Robert Conrad was one of them. But Mary, I think he was in there, right?
Yeah, he was. I was wrong. Yeah.
Lots of texts coming into the show today. John, why can't these actors just say thank you and sit down? John, seems to me he missed a great opportunity, Joaquin Phoenix, to promote the cause for better mental health care in the United States. Instead, he chose to talk about how, you know, whoever's further up the food chain needs to respect and offer justice to people further down the food chain. Humans to humans, humans to animals. He spent some time talking about how it's wrong for us to drink cow milk. He really did. John, as you probably know, says 773, milk cows have to be milked twice a day. If not, it would be beyond cruel. So I'm wondering, what exactly is the reasoning as to why we shouldn't drink milk? And somebody else said their cousin's a farmer, and he considers his cows a blessing. The crops were lost this year, says 630, and the cows helped him get through the year. I guess it just depends on how you look at it. By the way, our guest a little while ago was the editorial page editor for the Chicago Sun-Times, Tom McNamee. They're endorsing Kim Fox. They said she really botched that Jussie Smollett thing, but crime is going down because they're picking the right crimes and the right criminals rather than those for less than $1,000. Some of you think that's a good idea, but many of you say, oh my God, this guy's lost his mind. They're just trying to sell papers. Hey, Al, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi, John. I just had a question. I'm in my 60s. I'm retired on a fixed income. I mean, what happens if I go into a store and take a couple hundred dollars worth of stuff? Am I going to, are they not going to charge me or you know, what's going to happen? I mean, I could use some free stuff, you know? I just wonder how this is enforced. Is it only kids or in a mob of kids who run into a store and grab some stuff and run out? Those aren't charged, but I would be. And, you know, I don't know where I don't know where this ends.
I think if you did that, I think you'd be okay, Al. It'd be embarrassing, and you'd get in a little bit of trouble, but you'd be home in probably 36 hours, and there'd be no real serious consequences for you.
Oh, I'd have to spend a night in the lockup and get a bologna sandwich.
I think that's about it.
You know, it's not worth it to me. I mean, I'm not, I've lived all my life with not doing that, so, you know, it'd be a deviation. But I don't know. I could see some people might say, hey, you know, I'm having trouble making it. I'm going to walk out with some stuff. I think it's kind of a slippery slope. That's all I had to say.
Thanks for the call, Al. You have a good day.
Thanks. Bye.
Don't go stealing any stuff, okay?
No.
All right, okay. Good. Al's not going to do that. So John says 630, let them commit crimes and they don't get charged. That makes sense. Next texter, stop. Oh, my God. Kim Fox belongs in jail. She screwed the people of Cook County. So if the state does not charge them, am I left to take justice into my own hands? Not all of you are buying what the Sun-Times editorial today is selling, and that is that Kim Fox should keep her job. She should get reelected. I mentioned earlier that Michael Phillips in the Tribune was talking about the Oscars, and I do think it's worth noting how he began his review today. He said, I'd like to thank the Academy. Thank you for picking the South Korean film Parasite. It was the most vital, most elegant, most unpredictable, and best film of 2019, and you picked it. You picked the best film of the year the way you did 3 years ago with Barry Jenkins' Moonlight and precious few other times. Had director-co-writer Sam Mendes' 1917 won the best prize instead of Parasite, I'm sure a lot of folks inside Hollywood's Dolby Theater would have been perfectly content and reasonably enthused. But the spontaneous roar of joy greeting the ultimate win for Parasite didn't sound like dutiful enthusiasm. It sounded like ecstatic relief. They made that movie for $11 million. So far, it's grossed worldwide more than $165 million. And they don't have my 12 bucks yet, but by golly, I got to go see that thing now. And then he again mentions the local angle to the movie Hair Love, which won for Animated Short Film Award. I talked about that a little while ago, and one of you said, John, what's most touching about that short animated film with the Chicago angle, Hair Love, is the fact that the mom, the wife, in that little short cartoon is battling cancer. It's evident with her own head covered by a scarf and can no longer do her daughter's hair. Her husband is doing the best he can. My family wept when we saw that short film since we had gone through a similar situation. Thank you. Hey, Patty, this is John. Good morning. What can we do for you?
Hi, I was just going to say about that whole thing with the $1,000. Maybe if you, if they did something where if you get caught over three times, then it's not a misdemeanor anymore. Because it just seems like you could do it forever, and it, you'd have 300 misdemeanors on your record. It doesn't seem right. You know, there should, you know, maybe for a kid, the first couple of times they did something, you could treat it as a misdemeanor. But after that, you know, you're a habitual thief.
Somewhere in my head, the number's 10. It's not 3. You really have to screw up for a while for it to really screw you up. And I get you. I understand what you're saying.
If it was 10, I wouldn't be opposed to that. But I know me, I'd be after one. You know,
oh, God, I know. Isn't that funny? I mean, the idea that, hey, you go steal some stuff, you can get away with it. We still don't do it because most of us have a good moral compass. We're not going to do that.
But the thing is, also, a lot of people don't get caught till their seventh or eighth time.
Yeah, that's true, too. Hey, Patty, I got to go. Thank you for the phone call. Thank you for listening today.
Okay, you have a good day.
You Bye. Have a good day. There's this article in the Chicago Tribune over the weekend in the live section. Why I loved watching Kobe Bryant be a big girl dad. I just don't understand the adulation for Kobe Bryant. He was a great basketball player. I loved watching him play. And I really admire his dedication to his craft. His work ethic was off the charts. We should salute that. But that's all. The fact that he was a good father to his daughter should not be exceptional. I mean, really. And when you consider what else he did, wow. Aren't you ignoring something there? But below that article in the Tribune was the social graces column. I will read this to you. I need your stories, please. Question. What should you do if your friend is being a bad tipper, especially after making a huge fuss with the server at a restaurant? What should you do if your friend is a bad tipper, especially after making a huge fuss with the server at a restaurant? I don't even think you need that caveat. What should you do if your friend's a bad tipper, period? What if the service was fine and your friend leaves 11% or 9% or 5% and you think it deserves more? And then if they, you know, spend a lot of time ordering and take the time away from other tables, blah, blah, blah. What do you do? Now, this is generational for us. Sometimes, not that I go out to eat with my parents that often, but I know, I'll bet my parents have in the past been old school, by the book tippers. So it's not been unusual for me to looking left, looking right, and then sliding some extra money over to the server. Have you ever done something like that? Has anybody ever done something like that at your behest? Maybe as the poor tipper, you think, no, that's what that person deserves, and I don't want you rewarding their bad behavior. What's the matter, Elif?
No, I didn't have an answer to your question, but I have an opinion on this.
What's that?
I just think with money, people are set in their ways, and you can't tell them anything. I mean, the only way that you would really be able to approach this is be direct with your friend and say, hey, If you really feel like you're close enough with them and you should say something, you can say something to them. But I think with money, people have their own way and they're not going to change it.
Yeah. And now maybe you've alienated your friend too, or it's a problem
right.
with you and your friend now. So maybe, well, that's why I advocate just doing it on the sly. You know, this the column in the Tribune says, if you're good enough friends that you have reached over to look at the bill or were told the amount, you can let your friend know that you think the tip is not enough and offer to pay the difference. I think that's I would just do that on the sly. I'm not sure if in this scene we're splitting the check or that person is picking up the check. And again, I don't think that even matters. Sometimes if somebody's picking up the check, you offer to do the tip and then they graciously turn you down. That's not how you buy somebody dinner. And so, so then I don't know how you get a glance at the bill. In fact, I don't know how you find out what they're tipping anyway, but somehow you do see that they've tipped less than they should. Or maybe you just see that they've made a scene and you want to sort of compensate the server a little for their time, for what they had to go through. So we'll start at 312-981-7200. Have you been to this movie? I'm just curious how that plays out in your world. Glenn wanted to say something. Hey, Glenn, you're on the air.
Hi, John. Just a quick story. My dad and mom came down to visit me in Las Vegas when I was living there back in the 80s, where you used to have to give a good-sized tip to the maitre d' to be able to get a good seat for one of the big shows.
Wow.
And, yeah, that was just the way it worked. You would only pay like $20 to get in to see the show, but you had to get an exorbitant tip to be able to get anywhere near the stage. Well, my dad wanted to be the big man on campus and, you know, take me out for a nice dinner and a show. Well, he gave the maitre d' the old handshake $20 bill in his hand,
yeah,
thinking that was an astronomical dollar amount. And behind his back, my dad, I'm holding two $100 bills. Yeah, well, my arms wrapped around his shoulder, waving it at the maitre d' and winking at him, saying, make sure, you know, hey, it's really great my dad's taking care of us that way. And then all of a sudden, the whole rest of the night, my dad's like, see what I told you? $20 will get you a long way here in Las Vegas. And I'm like, you're right, Dad. $20 will get you a long way.
Oh, man. Oh, that's rich.
To this day, I still laugh about that, thinking to myself that he really thought. And I mean, we had, you know, the horseshoes booth up in front and everything like that, because back then, $200 was a lot of money in the 80s.
How about it? Well, so did your dad ever find out?
Oh, no, never. Yeah. No, I never would do that to him.
That you take to your grave and he takes to his. That's funny. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, Glenn. Well done. Thanks for the call.
Thanks. Sure. Bye-bye.
Your father raised you right. Take two? Okay. Donna, you're next. You're on WGN. Hi,
oh,
Donna.
Hi. Good morning. It's nice to talk with you.
Likewise.
My family and I will occasionally go out for, you know, breakfast or lunch with my mother. She's currently 94, so that's getting less and less. But back in the day when we did, we'd be at a busy, you know, breakfast place on a Saturday or Sunday, and Mom is asking for the strawberries on the side, and, you know, or
right,
if we're out to dinner, she doesn't want the potatoes, you know, the fish stacked on the potatoes and the vegetables as they present things. So one of us will always go up to the server discreetly and say, we tip well. And Mom is very sweet, but she is just, you know, she wants it her way.
That's funny. So, you just look at the waiter and go, you're going to really earn this, but here's a little extra.
Yes, and they're usually very, you know, accommodating and very sweet to her. You know. But it is a generational thing, I'm sure.
Donna, thanks for the call. And her point, too, is well taken. Maybe you right up front give them that, so at least they know that you know. Those of us that are regular riders on the L sometimes use the same stops. You get on and you get off. Elif and I have our own routine. At the Lake and State stop, there is a guy who almost every afternoon, Elif, you hear this guy, right? He has a bass guitar. He's pretty good. Sets up a couple of amplifiers, and then he plays tracks of music underneath, of songs that you recognized. And then usually he has various singers. Sometimes a dancer performs in front of him. Have you seen that older guy all dressed up in a black suit that taps?
Yes. He's really cool.
And it's actually, with the exception of a couple of singers, usually pretty good. It's not great audio, but I just... echo down there, and so you get it, that lady's covering, and it's actually pretty good. Wouldn't you agree, Elif, that the music we hear down there is usually pretty good
most of the time? There's been one person that I wasn't so crazy about.
He doesn't need to share the mic with that one guy,
right?
Yeah. No names.
Right.
Actually, we don't know the names. And on occasion, I've actually dropped a dollar bill in there, and he's kind of a staple. Mm-hmm. Last week, or was it the week before, one of the people who busks at one of these stops got, what is it, stabbed? Is that what the story was?
His arm got slashed.
Yeah.
And I think his guitar was thrown into the tracks.
That lady must have not been mentally well, right? She said that the music was bothering her. So she takes out a knife and slashes the guy. There's a GoFundMe page to help cover that guy's both medical bills and musical equipment bill because some of it got destroyed. And I'm all happy for that. But the larger picture here is that it seems like either there's more crime on the CTA or at least we're noticing more crime on the CTA. This one story is getting a lot of mileage because that person was maybe to some commuters well known, but that's really beside the point here. The mayor and the new temporary police chief have met with the CTA. We asked Brian Steele from the CTA, the vice president of communications, to jump on with us and just talk a little bit about the safety on the L. Hey, Brian, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You heard Elif and I talking about that. What do you want to say right out of the gate?
Well, I think your statement is correct. There has been a slight uptick in crime on the CTA over the past couple months, but I think a lot of it has been due to some of the more sensational incidents that we had. Just last week, we had two situations that really are aberrations. They're not something that happens a lot on CTA. As a matter of fact, we crunched some numbers. CTA sees a serious crime in about one of every 200,000 rides. So what that says is serious crime is pretty rare on the CTA. Unfortunately, it does happen, and that's why CTA and CPD are taking some extended steps to address it.
Well, you have 1.2 million rides a day?
1.5. What a lot of people don't know is we carry the equivalent of the entire city of Philadelphia each and every weekday. So if you think about the entire city of Philadelphia, there's probably more than just a couple crimes a day in that city, and that's kind of what you're seeing on the CTA. Now, that said, one crime is one too many, and that's why we're looking at various strategies using our Chicago Police Department resources, using our privately contracted security guards, using our security cameras, and a number of other strategies to help bring those numbers down.
I did the same thing when I saw those numbers. I thought, okay, so what does that mean? And then I looked up city populations, and I did the same thing. If you take Seattle and Minneapolis, put all of them on the CTA, that would be one day's rides. So it's a gigantic population, but that still means then 8, 9, 10 crimes a day that are worth noting. But again, it's crimes in whole city-sized populations. Here's a question for you, though, Brian. So what advice do you have for someone listening to you right now? It's 8 o'clock in the evening. They're downtown Chicago. They need to get from the theater district up north or to someplace else. Should they take the L?
Absolutely, they should. Again, the overwhelming majority of rides on CTA are safe and without incident. Now, if something does happen on CTA, the thing that we really encourage people to do is to let the authorities know. Dialing 911, pressing the call button in the rail car. If somebody feels uncomfortable during the ride, they can simply go to the next stop, get off the rail car, and board another one. That's really the best way to address things. There's usually only a few minutes in between stations, so it's a chance for people to let the people know that something's going on so that we can address it.
I went to a DePaul game down by McCormick Place, and after the game, it was about 10:30 at night. I walked to the L tracks. I think you know that I ride and am an advocate for public transportation. But literally, Brian, as I'm walking up to that red line stop, is that the red line there? I thought, is this a good idea? No, that's not the red line. That's the green line. And then I transfer to the red line, right?
Mm-hmm,
and as
correct.
I'm walking up to that green line stop, I thought, oh, John, call a cab or get an Uber. This, don't be stupid here. Don't get on that thing at 10:30 at night. Talk to me about that scene.
Well, again, we carry a huge amount of people each and every night, weekdays and weekends. And again, the overwhelming majority of those rides are without incident. I think one of the important things is just maintain awareness. A lot of the crimes that we see involve people who are paying close attention to their phone or their personal electronic device, maybe not so aware of their surroundings. So that's something that we really recommend riders. That can help you stay out of a lot of issues. And also, again, if something does happen, inform folks right away. 911 is always the number to call whenever there's any type of emergency or whenever your personal safety feels threatened. We have call buttons in all of the rail cars. We have call buttons on rail station platforms. And help is close by. To your point about riding at night, that's one of the discussions we've been having with the Chicago Police Department, which provides law enforcement for the CTA. Every day, the police department has scores of officers throughout the system, riding trains in stations, riding buses, and we're looking at even more effective ways to deploy them to, again, help address the uptick that we've seen. The good news is, according to some preliminary numbers that we just saw this morning, we are seeing a downward trend in the month of January. So it looks as though things are going in the right direction, but we recognize that there's much more work to do.
I appreciate all of that, but I'm less interested in reaching out for help when something's going south. I want to not put myself in a situation where I even need to do that. That's the thing that bothers me about even security cameras that may capture the video of somebody committing a crime, and that's good, but I don't want to be in a position to be the victim of a crime. And it seems to me like I'm making myself more vulnerable than I need to if at 10:30 at night I get on the system downtown.
Well, that's why CTA and CPD are looking at various deployment strategies for officers, some new technologies. That's why CTA employs privately contracted security guards because, yeah, we obviously, our goal is to stop a crime before it happens. We have a number of tools at our disposal to do that, and we're just looking for the ways to deploy them most effectively. They have been effective in keeping crime numbers down for some time, but recently we did see an uptick. Good news is those numbers are starting to trend down. But there's more that we can do and more that we will do.
Is it feasible to put some sort of security person or police officer on every platform 12 hours a day?
That would be really challenging. CTA has over 220 miles of tracks. We have 145 rail stations. We run 24/7 on two of our lines and nearly 24 hours on most of the other lines. So that would be a huge commitment of resources that I just don't think would be practical right now. I think what we can do is target our enforcement, which we currently do. We work with CPD to run missions where areas where we've seen, say, an uptick in pickpocketing or thefts. I think just more of a presence out on the system to remind customers that CTA is not a place to commit a crime. That's one of the things that we try to tout about our security camera network. We have over 33,000 security cameras throughout our entire system, and you've seen in the recent events, recent crimes that we've experienced, police have been able to make arrests really quickly, thanks in large part due to the high-definition images that we've been able to provide them. So our message to would-be criminals is, we're watching you. You're not going to get away with this, and we're going to have more resources out there to be even more of a deterrent.
Brian Steele from the CTA is on the phone line. You know, Kim Fox's office is in the news today and has been lately because they say they're not going to essentially prosecute with any vigor crimes of less than $1,000, which probably describes most crimes on the CTA. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that after this. We're just talking a little bit about the crime and the perception of crime on the CTA. The vice president of communications there is Brian Steele, who's been kind enough to join us in the past and is giving us some of his time today. Brian, Kim Fox said less than $1,000, it's not a felony, but is it different if it's on the CTA?
Well, what I can tell you is if there is an assault or any type of crime committed against a CTA employee, the CTA will always pursue the appropriate felony upgrades. Those crimes can be a felony against CTA employees. That's something that we take very seriously, and we will pursue it. We also follow all of the cases that happen on CTA, including the incidents that happened last week. We follow those through the criminal justice process to make sure that the appropriate penalties are being applied to offenders. Yes, theft of a phone or an electronic device might not meet that monetary threshold or that dollar threshold, but still, that's an important and unfortunate thing that's happened to one of our customers. So that's something that we'll be watching closely, and we will always advocate for penalties for people who opt to commit a crime on CTA.
I was under the impression that because it's public transportation, it's a it's a different entity than just at a store or street corner. It's a federal crime and therefore is prosecuted as a felony if you're on the CTA, which gets federal funding or something like that.
Right. That only applies to employees, not to customers.
Oh.
Right. CTA is a public space. If you're a victim of a theft on the CTA, that would be similar to if you're a victim of someone taking your phone on a sidewalk.
So the
same charges would apply. But again, it's something that CTA takes seriously. Our goal is to provide customers the safest environment possible on our buses and trains. That's why we have the partnership with the Chicago Police Department. That's why we've made the investment in cameras and technology, et cetera, et cetera. The challenge is, again, with such a big system and with such huge numbers of customers every day, it's really impossible for us to be every place every time. However, we are looking at ways, and we've been successful a little bit thus far and plan to continue to be, to find ways to better deploy the resources, to focus on high traffic stations, areas where there have been incidents, so that we can start bringing these numbers down further.
You said a little while ago it's just not feasible to put people on, say, every station, on every platform. I'll accept that. But you also mentioned that there is a call button on every train car. Is that true?
That is correct. Every rail car is equipped.
I didn't know that. Where are they?
They're by the doors, and they sit under. If you look on the ceiling of a rail car, you'll see one blue light above one of the doors. That's
who gets
where,
that call, if I may, Brian? Then does the conductor or central?
Right. It goes to the train operator, and our protocol is if somebody presses the button, it engages a dialogue with the operator, so somebody can tell the operator what's going on. But if somebody hits that button and they don't feel comfortable speaking out because, say, an incident is still going on or they don't want, someone to come after them, then the protocol is for the operator to stop the train at the next station and come back to that rail car. So even if you press the button and say nothing, the operator will be back as quickly as possible. It's a system that we've had in place for a number of years, and it's an easy way for someone to notify. But again, I can't emphasize enough that if there's some situation that jeopardizes personal safety, calling 911 is absolutely the best way to go. Again, Chicago Police provide the law enforcement for our system, and they're always good about responding very quickly to incidents on the system.
If something was going on a moving train car, though, I'm so glad you said that, because I think, wait, this is ridiculous. The train operator is right there, and I have no way to tell him what's happening on his train, and he's useless to me unless I can communicate with him.
Right.
And then if I hit that button and say, hey, I'm uncomfortable with what's happening here, something I think is about to go down, that may just escalate things. If I hit that button and don't say anything, they're going to stop at the next stop?
That is correct, and they will come back. They know which car the call came from, and they will come back to see what the situation is. Another thing that we recommend to customers, if you do feel uncomfortable on one rail car, at the next stop, just get off that rail car, go to the next one, or go onto the platform. That's where you can notify staff. So that's another easy way to remove yourself from a situation.
By the way, on phone line one, Jan, you're on WGN. What was your question, Jan? You're on the air.
Hi, John. I just agree with you. I think Kim Fox is, I can't agree with her at all. I have a granddaughter that has to ride the red line to school. And then sometimes after school, she gets back on the red line and goes to your neighborhood, Lakeview. And I worry myself sick. I tell her, never take out your phone. Don't use your phone. What is Kim Fox going to prosecute these thugs when they're in gangs? I just don't see it happening, and I don't feel like she's ever safe on that red line. Just like you tell, your public when you're on the radio that you don't feel safe. They attacked a 62-year-old man, a 22-year-old man who was very able-bodied, came to his aid. They beat him up and took his phone. What's a 21-year-old girl going to do? Get up and push a blue button and wait? I mean, I don't see any solution, and I don't think crime has gone down on the red line. I just don't believe it.
Jan, hold on a second. I appreciate your case. I'll let Brian react to that. I know you missed the very beginning of it, but she also wondered if it's smart for people to use their phones on the L. But address her general concerns there, Brian.
Sure. well, related to using your devices, it's like everything else. Just be, we suggest that you be sensible about it. If you can just remain aware of your surroundings, if you're sitting by a door, you know, maybe not have your phone out as people are getting in and out, because unfortunately that would be something easy for someone to snatch. Of course, people are going to look at their phones and their devices, but again, just keeping a general awareness of what's going on around you is important. And again, related to the overall question of safety and security, you know, bear in mind that out of 1.5 million trips each day, we're only seeing a handful of crimes. Now, again, a handful is a handful too many. We all agree on that, and that's why CPD and CTA are so focused on deploying more resources and doing so more effectively, and again, looking at technologies to help us out with this. So I think the overwhelming majority of riders of CTA ride each and every day without any incident, but when something does happen, we ask that they inform people, they press the call button, they call 911, they move themselves to another car. That is the best advice that we can give if a situation does pop up.
And to her specific concerns, I'll just make it hypothetical. If my granddaughter or that granddaughter's grandmother needs to go to or from DePaul or to or from UIC, and it's in the evening or the morning, you would not advise them to seek alternative means of transportation. Go ahead and get on the L.
Again, public transportation is the heartbeat of Chicago. We stitch together all of the neighborhoods throughout the city. It's the most affordable and oftentimes the most convenient way to get around the city. People do so each and every day, 7 days a week, and it is a really viable and good option to getting around the city. Unfortunately, like everywhere else in the city, there has been some crime on CTA. But the leadership of the police department, the leadership at CTA, the leadership of the mayor's office, we're all very focused on this recent uptick and are looking at strategies, resources, and ideas to help bring down the numbers. The numbers are already low, but we do want to bring them down even further and reassure customers that CTA is the safest and best choice for them.
Last question, Brian. Can you be more specific about that? What are some of those strategies? Can you tell us?
Those specifics will be coming shortly. We meet with the CPD, Chicago Police Department, all the time. We have regularly scheduled meetings. We're in communication with them on a daily basis. We did have a meeting last Friday to talk about some other ideas and strategies that I know we'll be announcing sometime in the very near future.
Okay. I appreciate your time, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Brian Steele is Vice President of Communications for the CTA. Kelly, this is John. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I ride the CTA all the time. I've been assaulted. I've had people smoking, drinking. I've pushed that button. Nobody comes. I report it to the driver. I write letters, and they say, what do you want us to do? What do you want us to do about it? The time I got assaulted, nobody, but they stopped the train. But then by the time the person from the station got up there, she's like, well, they're gone now. I'm like, so I don't agree with him at all. I don't think it's safe. I mean, I have to ride it. I'm a flight attendant. I ride the blue line. When you get on early in the morning, it's all homeless people. I push that button. I've been assaulted. I've had friends that have been assaulted. And no one at the CTA does anything. I've written letters. They don't. I talked to the, again, I don't think that's true what he's saying. It's not true.
The guy on the red line next to me one day last week was smoking pot. And the people are just kind of, you know, smiling at this scene because pot's legal now. But you're not supposed to smoke anything. You're sure not supposed to be smoking pot. So then it was like, well, what do we do about this? Do we want to stop the train or do we just endure this? It's the same way with people that are misbehaving or sleeping, taking up three or four seats. You just kind of shrug because that's the way it's going to be. But it shouldn't be that way. I'm really sorry to hear your story, too. I'm out of time, but that's not the last conversation we're going to have with them, Kelly. And I'm glad that you called in.
Okay. I just happened to turn on here that and pushing that button. This doesn't help, so I just thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
Yeah, likewise. It's 11:08. This is WGN. John Williams, you know, on Mondays we do the Mega Monday Morning Quiz. We do it on Mondays because that's fun to say. We'll do that at 11:40 this morning. How well do you know your state politicians, the infamous ones? your infamous Chicago politicians. I think you'll do pretty well at this, but let's all play along. We'll do that in about a half an hour. Just before the news, we visited with the Vice President of Communications over at the CTA. We were talking about the crime on the CTA, and it actually intersects with the way Kim Fox is handling prosecutions in Cook County. 214 said that the United States should use 999 for emergency calls, quicker and less thought needed in a crisis. So I don't know if they mean that hitting 999 is easier than hitting 911, or is it that that would be a higher level of emergency? Because have you ever dialed 911 and you almost apologize when they pick up on the other end? You say, don't bring a fire truck. I'm just saying this. I didn't know who else to call. So maybe we need another level, 999, and man, they're coming running. Although they usually are when you hit 911, too. Robert wanted to say something. Robert, oh, pardon me. Robert, I'm coming to you in the order they came, so we'll start with Tom. You're on WGN. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Good morning. I'll pose a question rhetorically. Criminals aren't nice people, but they're not stupid. And do you think when they get on a train and they're endeavoring to do mayhem, do they see that little red sticker with the slash through it that purports that it's a gun-free zone? Telling them one thing, that a law-abiding citizen that has a legal concealed carry will not be on this train. And if I go to perpetrate mayhem and initiate an assault, I'm going to be able to get away with it. That's all I ask.
Now, I was actually wondering about that. Would we all feel safer if you could have your guns on the CTA and then when somebody's doing something, 20 people on that car, maybe one of them's got a gun. You like that scene, Tom?
I like the idea of the notion, okay? The notion that there might be somebody on that train that has it. When you put those stickers on there, it tells you that there is nobody that's legally carrying on this train. And I say the same thing for the public schools and the archdiocese properties, both the churches and the schools, that when you see in shopping malls, when you see those stickers, it's telling a bad guy that there's nobody in here that's willing to defend the rest of the community.
Tom, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
For some reason, schools to me are different. I do not want anybody with a gun in the public schools. You may feel differently. And for some reason, the CTA feel, you know, I don't think all public places are the same, but a grade school, the idea that a teacher or some off-duty security guard has got a gun and they will always make the right decisions is more faith in those people than I'm willing to place. Robert, you're on WGN. It's your turn, Robert. What do you want to say?
Hey, John. I just wanted to say, I mean, for the majority of people that get assaulted, especially on the subways because they get their phones taken away, I mean, they get snatched away because people are so embedded in their phones. I mean, everybody gets on these trains without recognizing any of the surroundings. If they stand up firm, their heads held up high, viewing their surroundings, let their phones be viewed when it's time to view it. If you're on public places like that in such a confined area, that's what a lot of these guys look for. They look for the one that's distracted. It's so embedded into their phones and all that, and they reach in, snatch, and get running. The person looks up, you know, surprised, and now they can't describe who it was because they're so focused on their phones. I don't think it's far-fetched to have at least maybe one police officer per train, not per single train, but per the whole thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and walk.
Have them alternate, you know, every car. Every time he makes a stop, get off, go on the next cart. Next stop, you can get off and go on to the next cart. And, you know, it's creating a job. If you can have one officer, at least everybody will recognize there's an officer here somewhere, and he's within this line of trains here at all given times. And I don't think that's far-fetched to view it in that way. Also, when they put these postings on the news as people that assaulted somebody on a train or in public areas, I think the news need to do a better job in actually keeping that picture just on there long enough so somebody can recognize it. Because it almost seems like a drive-by of a picture when they put it up there and state, oh, this person got, you know, assaulted. Here's the person. And then it's almost like a blink of an eye. It's like, Lord have mercy, I barely got to see the picture. And I think if they just let it sit up there just a little bit more and kind of focus on that person, maybe we can catch them. But if, you know, if they put them on there where it's of a blink of an eye, it's in and out and it's gone. And that's it. You don't see them anymore. But
you've made three points here, Robert, and I agree with all of them. When I get to be king, I'm going to put you in charge of all that stuff. Is that okay?
Sure, absolutely. I'm with it.
All right. Thanks for your time, man.
Thanks, son.
Good call. Let's go to Gail. You're on WGN. Hi, Gail. What do you want to say?
Oh, yes, hi, John. I was listening to your program about the CTA and their unresponsiveness, and I have to disagree with that woman who called. She had a bad experience. I had a good experience, two of them. There was a woman and her boyfriend strung out. They looked, I don't know if they were homeless or not, but they were cursing and very vulgar, and then they decided they didn't like somebody at their end of the train. And it was really disturbing for all of us. We're all giving each other looks. So I went to the opposite side. Say they were at the north end. I went to the south end, pressed the button, and briefly told the operator what was going on. They immediately stopped the train. They came and removed those people from the car.
I'm glad to hear that, because she said that doesn't happen. That was her experience.
Well, she had one experience, and I had a positive experience, and that was myself doing it. And that was on the red line in the daytime. And then another time this past the summer, the train was stopped. Suddenly, I was on the brown line going home. So it was probably about 5:30. And I asked other passengers if they know what was going on. And finally, they told us that the train was stopped because a man had a knife, and he was threatening other people on the train with it. So here's another good experience. They came right away and dealt with it. They had to get the police there, I believe, to get him off the train. But nobody was injured. So I felt bad for the CTA getting a bad rap, because they do respond in many cases.
Good call. Gail, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome, and I love you, Jen. And you know what? I just want to say, Jen, you've come full circle. You had the 9 o'clock spot a few years ago.
Isn't that funny? That's right. I mean, I've done just about every shift here, but overnights, and I don't want to do them. So I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you back, Jen.
That's nice of you to call. Thanks, Gail. Okay, a couple more calls on this. Don't forget our Mega Monday morning quiz is fun today in about 20 minutes. Somebody said they ought to raise the fares at the CTA and use the money to hire more security guards on the platforms. You want them on the platforms. I think I do, too. A couple of you, though, said stuff like, hey, my high school kids took the red line to and from school for years, and they were totally fine. One graduated last year. They were smart about it, not on their phones, aware of their surroundings, and they didn't ride it late at night, which, you know, is one of the questions I kept asking our guest a little while ago. Okay, after the game, should I ride the CTA? And he said yes. I guess he's not going to say no, but he didn't, to be honest with you, completely persuade me that that isn't always the best choice for some people. It is the least expensive, and it's almost always the quickest way to get from A to B. But I don't know if I would advise everybody to always take the L. That's just the way a lot of us feel about that. I'm glad, though, that some of you are relating your positive experiences when something did look a little untoward. Tom, it's your turn. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, so listen, I'm a former Marine, and the story is in the 20s, 1920s, there were a lot of train robberies on the mail cars. And so the commandant put two Marines on every mail car, and his instructions were, if there's a mail robbery, there better be two dead Marines on that car. And this was made public, and there was never another attempt to rob a mail car on the trains after that.
Put the Marines on the cars. Or the National Guard. Somebody, thanks for the call, Tom. Somebody said, what about those guardian angels? I didn't know we ever had them in Chicago. Producer Olive says her sister remembers seeing them on the system. I never saw the guardian angels on the system. I knew they had them in New York. Wally, what did you want to say? You're on the air. Wally, hi.
Hey, John. Two quick points. One is the communications guy, I think, had a good spin on the safety issue, in that he was comparing the number of riders, I think it was per week or per day, to the population, I think, of Philadelphia.
Right.
And saying whatever the stats are comparable.
Per day.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go a little bit Freakonomics on you here, because the people who are living in Philadelphia are there 24 hours a day. People are on the CTA, what, maybe an hour a day? So I propose you have to multiply those CTA stats maybe by 24 to come up with something comparable, because, again, those people are living in those cities 24 hours a day, but you're only on the CTA maybe an hour, whatever.
Right. So that's a city that city evaporates, after an hour, whereas in Philadelphia, they're there and vulnerable, if you will, 24/7.
Right. The other thing, John, is in your kingdom, I think when they give the description of the alleged perpetrators here, that they're wearing a hoodie and gym shoes, I don't think is very good, especially when there may be, you know, multiple people who are seeing these people, and that really, that's the best description we have is a hoodie and gym shoes. I mean, can we get a little more description on these people? The hoodie and the gym shoes can change real quick. Other things about them can't.
I'll tell the Stevens that you called, because I think you now they're going to sue you for repurposing the Freakonomics brand. But you're thinking out of the box. I appreciate that.
Got it. Thanks, John.
Thanks for the call. That's Wally.
By the way, I gave you bad information. My sister just texted me, and she said she doesn't know what I'm talking about.
There you go.
Maybe
so
not.
You're completely making that up.
But I've heard of them before. I feel like she was the one who told me about them the first time.
Well, they've existed in other cities, and my understanding is that the Guardian Angels were just, I don't think they were armed. Maybe they were, but they were certainly connected. They had uniforms or hats, and you had a greater sense of security when you saw them. Somebody said that they like it when they see a German Shepherd on a leash of a police officer at the station. I do, too. As I was getting off the red line today, there was a couple of pretty square cops, you know, burly Chicago police officers. There wasn't a dog with them, but, you know, they were ready for anything getting onto the train that I was getting off of. I didn't know that there was anything wrong. I just think they were doing what we all hope they do, you know, walk the beat a little bit and make your beat those train cars and that platform. That's probably a kind of miserable beat. I mean, do you want to do that for a living? But maybe you don't do it every day. I don't know how you staff it, but I really like the idea of them just showing a presence. There have been times where we were in Europe, and I know this was the case, I think the first time that Brenda and I led a group of travelers, and it was either with Steve Bertrand Travel at SteveBertrandTravel.com. Or maybe it was Kelly Cruises. Visit KellyCruises.com. And when we were in Paris, it was after some sort of attack had taken place. And there would be groups of maybe five military men, boots laced up, camouflage pants tucked into them, berets, and machine guns. And they were walking around the tourist areas, and they were not smiling. And as a tourist, it's a little jarring, but it's also a little comforting. You go, okay, that looks like a show of force, and I don't mind that in a major international city. All right, we're out of time for this today. It's 11:22. I appreciate the CTA at least coming on with us and talking about this. We were talking earlier about tipping. There's a sort of social graces column in the Tribune on Sunday. And they said, what do you do when the other person that you're with and they're picking up the bill or part of the bill, what do you do when they don't leave a very good tip, especially if they've been a lot of work for the waiter or waitress? And the idea is, should you slip an extra tip on the side? And the answer, of course, is yes. And then several of you are telling us about your strategies and your incidents in this case. John, I used to fight this battle for generations. I love this buddy more than a brother. Now I just throw down extra money. No intention to hide it. He gets it. I get it. It causes no friction. But evidently, these two people have sort of dealt with this long enough that the one guy goes, I know you're only going to tip 12%. I want to do 20. You just put down $3.50. I'm going to put down $4 more. We're done with it. And you walk out. John, there's a misperception or conception that African Americans are bad tippers. I know my dad was. And as a result, I always tip generously so as not to perpetuate the stereotype. And finally, when with bad tippers, one, I put more money on the table hoping they get the hint, and two, made note of the server's name and mailed money to him or her, making note of the day, time, and the table location, they get it. Best to ask for separate checks. The worst tippers are often the ones with the nicest cars and houses and multiple homes. I don't know if that's true, but thanks for your text messages. You know, yesterday we were talking this morning about the Oscars last night, and Joaquin Phoenix's speech was a little off the rail, but what did you expect? I thought it was very thoughtful. And if you take the time to listen back to it, and I'll bet you won't, it's really thoughtful. You might not even agree with what he was saying, but I think he articulated it really well. The fact that he was talking about justice and how we all need to try and help each other, live with love and help each other. The fact that he to illustrate that, said that we shouldn't drink cow's milk was probably an unfortunate example. Maybe not the best choice, although he's into that too. I guess he's a vegan. So fair enough. But the speech that I think people should be talking about, if they just want to talk about what not to do at the Oscars, was Renee Zellweger's speech. It was delivered badly. It was halting. Maybe she was nervous. Maybe she was trying to be dramatic, but it was just badly done. And she made the mistake that I think all of us would ask those people to never make. And that is where she just simply reads a list of names of people you and I don't know.
Matt and Jeff, Eric Vitro, Paul, Gary, Jesse Buckley, Finn Wittrock, Rufus Sewell, my extended family at CAA, Peter Bryan and Kevin, Nicole and Dom.
I edited that. I mean, it went longer than that. Trust me. She was just going on. She didn't pay any homage to Judy Garland, really. And there was an opportunity. I mean, there's a lot to be said about what happened to Judy Garland. She didn't take the time to do that. At the end, she did try and send a message that at least one unifying thing. It was kind of, well, I'll get to another kind of in just a minute. But her point was that our heroes can unite us. That we are a lot of people with a lot of different views in the world. But if you think about the positive people and the positive things, we'll find out that we have a lot in common.
Neil Armstrong, Sally Ride, Dolores Huerta, Venus and Serena and Selena, Bob Dylan, Scorsese, Fred Rogers, Harriet Tubman. We agree on our teachers, and we agree on our courageous men and women in uniform who serve. We agree on our first responders and firefighters.
Okay, so thank you for that. And these are people that we all look up to and admire. And so now we've found a point of commonality. You know who tried that large just last week?
America is a land of heroes. This is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt, of many great generals, including Washington, Pershing, Patton, and MacArthur. This is the home of Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Amelia Earhart, Harriet Tubman, the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, Wyatt Earp, Davy Crockett, and Annie Oakley.
His list went on too. So I get the point, but it's not so easily delivered. Several of you have pointed out the guardian angels were here. You were right, Elif. John, we absolutely had the guardian angels before. Many of you remember them in the 80s. It was not a big movement here, and it's gone away. I need somebody to call right now, 312-981-7200. You ready to take our Mega Monday morning quiz? If you get all the questions right, win a Mega black or red hoodie. If you don't get them all right, you will receive a Mega black or red hoodie. About the speeches at the Oscars, John, after listening to many speeches at the Oscars and Emmys and Grammys by vegans, I've come to the conclusion that being a vegan makes you crazy. Tipping continues to be a big topic on the text line today. I have cheap tipping friends, and they all have more money than me. I make up the difference. If I can't afford a decent tip, I should stay home or go to someplace like Panera. And listen to this. Somebody said that about tipping, my father-in-law, John, in his 60s, would always grab the waitress before we even got our orders in, and he would slip her a $1 bill like nobody could see it. That was his tip. And, of course, we always then tipped a lot more after he got up and left the table. $1. Did you hear the story about the guy a little while ago? He called in and he said that, I guess in Vegas, once upon a time, to get a good table for the shows, you'd tip the maitre d' or whoever is seating you, and that would get you a good seat. So the father-in-law is taking the son-in-law out, wants to show him a good time, or maybe it was the father to the son. And so he says, you watch this, kid. Here's how you do it. And he whips out a $20 bill, and the younger of the two thinks, $20 is not going to get us a good seat. We're lucky that we're in the door. And so as he's waving the $20 bill or handing it to the maitre d', the younger behind him is holding up $200 bills in each hand, going, 100, these are for you. Get us a good seat. And so then, by golly, they got a booth right up front. He slips him the 200, never told the older that he had made it 220 rather than $20 to get in the door. and never told him. That's how you do it. All right. So we got our winner ready to go, Producer Elif, or pardon me, our player in 3-2-1 Woof.
Come back to Chicago.
To Chicago.
Chicago.
Drove to Chicago.
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 Shy City. Shy City.
I'm coming home again.
We do this on Mondays at this time. It's our Mega Monday Morning Quiz, sponsored by Mega Pros. They make it fun to get stuff done. Tim's calling in from New Lenox. Hey, Tim, you're on WGN Radio. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Your Majesty.
See, I already like this guy. All right, so I don't see Ryan in the seat. Andy's in sports. Lauren Lapka's over in Traffic Central. Hey, Lauren, will you be the lifeline for our guest?
I can certainly try my best.
Okay, and since we don't have anybody in the news box right now, I'll let you reach out to Lauren more than once. You ready?
Okay.
Although Lauren didn't grow up and spend... Lauren was away for a while, so maybe she's not going to be the best lifeline. How are you going to do on this?
I was only gone from 2015 to the beginning of 2019.
While you were gone, did you forget how nutty Illinois politicians are?
Absolutely not.
All right. So this former governor conspired to commit pay-to-play schemes, including an attempt to fill the vacant U.S. Senate seat of then-President Barack Obama. Who is this former governor?
Blagojevich.
You're one for one, sir. Attaboy. These are all Illinois or Chicago politicians. Born in Sinking Springs Farm, Kentucky, this politician died at the age of 56. He is the only president to hold the patent. He received a patent for a flotation device for the movement of boats in shallow water. Illinois claims this person, though he was born in Kentucky, he died at the age of 56. Who am I talking about?
Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln is correct. Number three, a newspaper man famous for his bow tie from Macanda, Illinois. He served in the United States Senate, but he quit in part because he was tired of asking for money. He ran for president but did not win. He endorsed Barack Obama for Senate, and he once appeared on Saturday Night Live with a singer of the same name.
Paul Simon.
Paul Simon is correct. And a boy. By the way, do we have the Paul Simon audio ready to play at some point here? Give me a thumbs up when you do. It should be in the queue. How about this one? He was raised in a low-income family in small towns of northern Illinois, twice elected president of the Screen Actors Guild, the labor union for actors, where he worked to root out communist influence.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronnie Reagan. When he left office in 1989, he held an approval rating of 68%. It matched those of Franklin Roosevelt and Bill Clinton as the highest ratings for presidents as they left office in the modern era. Clinton, Roosevelt, and Ronald Reagan. How about this one? From Bloomington, Illinois, he wanted to be president and was appointed by President Kennedy as U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. At the age of 12, while demonstrating rifle technique, he accidentally shot and killed a 16-year-old friend, a gifted writer and speaker, and Illinois' 31st governor. Who is that?
Adlai Stevenson.
Adlai Stevenson is correct. The second. We need Adlai badly. He was the only mayor in Chicago history to go to college on a full-ride ballet scholarship.
Ballet.
He is the only mayor in Chicago history to go to college on a full ride ballet scholarship.
Oh. I need help, but I think it might be Rahm Emanuel.
What are you guessing over there, Lapka?
That's kind of what I was thinking.
He is diminutive. I mean, I don't see
he
Daly doing that.
He's light on his feet, too.
I don't see Richard M. or Richard J.
Nope.
All right, we'll go with Rahm.
The correct answer is Rahm Emanuel.
Nice.
Ooh, lucky.
How about that? In 1993, she was the first woman to wear pants on the United States Senate floor. It was against the rules in 1993 for women to wear pants. She was also the first female African-American senator. She was also U.S. ambassador to New Zealand and Samoa. Who is she?
From Illinois?
Yeah, how about them apples?
I have...
And Lauren is probably too young to have voted for her, so I don't think you had a chance, Lauren. Got a shot at that one?
93. Oh, Carrie Mosley Braun.
Ding, 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 ding. Can you believe that in 1993, it was against Senate rules for women to not wear a dress on the Senate floor? I mean, are you kidding? And so they changed it so that they can wear pants, but then they have to have a certain kind of top on. I don't remember if it was a blouse or a... No, they had to have a jacket. They had to have a jacket on. Now, there must be rules like that for the men, too, then, right? That the men must have to wear a suit
and tie?
Probably
a jacket and tie.
Yeah.
Well, they're planning ahead for Hillary.
One more for you. You ready?
Yes.
Longest-serving governor in Illinois history. Who is the longest-serving governor in Illinois history?
Ron, what do you think? I think maybe Jim Thompson.
Big Jim?
That looks good to me.
He served 10 years, I think.
The correct answer is Jim Thompson. I think it was more than 10. By the way, I wasn't able to make this into a question for you, but it's a fun little fact. The first governor of Illinois, Richard Yates. Yes, there were two. Oh, I see. He wasn't the first governor. But the first governor, Richard Yates. We had another guy who was governor named Richard Yates. But the first governor, Richard Yates, earned the nickname Drunken Dick. At his inauguration in 1861, he was drunk and kept President Abraham Lincoln and other dignitaries waiting for half an hour while he talked. He stumbled down the aisle, fell into his chair, and the House clerk had to read his speech for him.
Illinois.
How about exactly? How about that? Hey, you did real well, Tim. In fact, I believe, with Lauren's assist, you got all 10 of them right. Where are you listening to us today, Tim?
I'm from New Lenox.
Is that where you are right now? Are you retired? Are you working?
No, I'm on the way home from work.
And what do you do, sir?
I drive a truck.
Oh, wow.
I made a delivery to South Side of Chicago, and I'm going home for the day.
What'd you deliver today?
Zinc.
Zinc. Zinc?
Metal zinc.
Wow.
To a foundry.
How about that? Fascinating. I really mean that, Tim. Keep doing what you're doing. Hold on. Talk to Aleph. We'll get you one of those Mega Monday morning hoodies, okay?
Thank you, Your Majesty.
About tips, we've been talking about them today. If your partner under tips, what do? A lot of you sneak some money to the person that deserves it. 773 said, Panera does take tips. Somebody else texted in and said, if you can't afford the tip, then stay home or go to Panera. Do you leave money sometimes on the table at those kind of places where it's quasi self-serve? You go up and order and then they eventually bring it to you, but it's not full service. It's kind of a weird situation for some folks. Hey, it's nice and sunny in Arlington Heights, said 847. It's not downtown Chicago, but happy for you in Arlington Heights. I'll head over, stand in that spot. A little while ago, Tom McNamee was on with us. He's the editorial page editor at the Chicago Sun-Times, which you may have heard on our news, said that they now endorse Kim Fox for the Democratic primary for state's attorney, which means for the office itself. Whoever wins the Democratic ticket here wins the race. So should she continue in her position, Kim Fox? She, the one that bungled the Jussie Smollett case. And I began my conversation with him a little while ago saying, okay, but about that, should we trust Kim Fox?
Can we trust her? That's a good question. I think we can. I think she's a person of integrity. You know, I'm expecting this endorsement to get some interesting reaction. And so far, John, it hasn't happened. I was expecting to see my email box filled up with people upset that we would endorse the person who let Jussie Smollett walk. And it hasn't happened. We're actually getting kind of the opposite, but that'll change. I'll hear from those people eventually. I think our view was there's a philosophy of justice that we believe in, which is we have to take bad people off the streets. We have to make people safer than we are. And we have to do it in a larger way that doesn't take low-level offenders, you know, like 19-year-old kids who are shoplifters, and put them in jail. Because, frankly, nobody comes out of jail a better citizen. And it's a tough balance, and I don't pretend that there isn't a tension between those two things. We could lock up everybody in the world, and our streets would be safer. But in the long run, I'm not sure those people wouldn't just be more dangerous than they are. So it's what might do make your question. Can we trust her? I think we can. I think what I'm saying is we trust the philosophy and we trust what she's done so far, except with Jesse Smollett.
Well, but see, that's
really
it.
Screwed up.
Right. Not only did she screw up, I mean, as you acknowledge, it was more than just a lack of transparency. I'm not sure that something more sinister than that wasn't happening there. And I'm also bothered by the fact that because it was embarrassing or worse, she was not honest with us. So if something happens again and those factors come into play and she deceives us again, you know, shame on, what is it? Shame on you if you fool me once. Shame on me if you fool me twice. So that's it. I don't care about Jussie Smollett, but I care about that.
I actually agree with you a lot. And one of the considerations we had in doing this was, when is Dan Webb going to come out with his report?
Yeah. He's the guy that's looking into this.
Because as you say, what happens if the report comes out and it shows a much deeper sort of cynicism and insider politics than we can imagine? That would make us look a little silly to endorse her if it's bad enough, right? On the other hand, I think there's a really good bet that Dan Webb is not going to come out with that report before March 17th, before the primary. He's a pro, and I think he knows he'd look like Jim Comey if he came out with that report just before the election. So we sort of have to go with what we know.
Editorial page editor at the Sun-Times, Tom McNamee, is on the phone line. Look, before maybe we don't need to spend any more time on the Jussie Smollett thing, but I'm a little intrigued by this idea. The threshold used to be, I think, $300. Now it's $1,000. If you steal for $999 in Chicago, we will not treat that as a felony theft. You'll still be in trouble for it, but not very much. What happens to those people that steal $800 worth of stuff from me or from a store?
Well, as you say, the problem is they don't charge until it's up to $1,000. Prior to this, they would charge you at $300. Now, there is, once again, there is no 100% right or wrong here. One of the things I try to do as an editorial page director is try to get across the notion that there is no black and white. There is no absolute right and wrong. There's a question of trying to balance things. So in this particular case, I actually think it makes sense not to spend your resources, which are limited in Cook County, going after shoplifters up to $1,000, when you could be spending that time on people who are serious criminals with guns.
Go ahead, Tom.
The other reason for that is when they do the research, what you find out is that if you charge people who are shoplifters at the level of, say, $500 or $600, the store owners don't show up for court.
Yeah.
The store owners don't pursue it. They want to get the message out there, we don't tolerate shoplifters. So they call these, you know, they call the cops charge people. But the store owners, frankly, have gotten what they want. So what happens with so many of these charges under $1,000 is they get dropped because the witnesses don't show up.
Well, I don't know about that. All I know is what a message that sends to all of us, that if you steal $750 of stuff from me, we're going to treat that like it's nothing, because heaven forbid we put you in Cook County for a while and then you come out worse for it. I mean, that's an unintended consequence, but shouldn't there be some consequence for stealing from people?
What we have said in the past, actually, since you brought it up, we don't get into the – what we said in the past is $1,000 might be too high, $300 is too low, somewhere in the middle might be someplace there could be a compromise.
Okay, but that's a crazy conversation to me still. I mean, listen, I don't want to cut off our nose to spite our face. Let's not make things worse here. But really, you and I are now negotiating how much we're willing to let people steal from us before we do anything about it. That's crazy.
No, it's not crazy, John. We do it every day. That's what our laws do. You and I do that every day. You and I would both agree that you wouldn't put a guy in Cook County jail for a $50 shoplifting. I think we'd both agree you wouldn't do it for $100. So at some point in each of our own minds, we are already making those decisions about where to draw the line.
Okay, so then, and rather than waste time and money and resources on that, she's going after gun crimes, more serious crimes, and at the end of the day, we are safer as a result, and that was her campaign promise, that's her initiative, and Tom, you're telling me that's working, right?
It's, you know what, I think it's working, it's really not working. You know, we give the examples, gun crimes have gone down in these specific communities where this gun crime unit has gone into effect. Violent crime in Chicago continues to go down. I don't think she gets all the credit or even most of the credit for that, but it happened on her watch. I don't see anything to say that the city's blowing up with more crimes against her. I see modest indications that it's going in the right direction, and I don't see the other folks as being an alternative to her.
If you do not already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper like the Chicago Sun-Times, the editorial page editor. Tom McNamee is on a phone. Tom, I always enjoy your conversation.
Can I just say one thing, by the way? You know, as I was on the train when I got the call from your producer.
Yeah.
I just want to say how much I appreciate the fact you still do this. Do you know how few radio outlets nowadays, especially in AM, spend any time talking about local news in a thoughtful way like this? It just doesn't happen. So, for the record.
You keep doing what you do, my friend. Thank you for that.
All right. Take care. Are we all done?
Yes. The interview is over now, Tom. I'm hanging up on you.
See you later, John. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tom McNamee's a nice guy, although I know a lot of you don't agree with him. Boy, Mike, if his email isn't reflecting some pushback yet, he said it probably will, because my text line sure did not entirely agree with his position there. Plenty of you are saying that's just crazy talk. John, with new delivery services back to tipping, DoorDash, Grubhub, etc., the drivers can see your tip before they accept your order, and they can decline to make a delivery. You want your food faster? Tip bigger. Many of us don't deliver for anything less than $1 a mile. Wow! Never thought about it. Never thought about it that way. Didn't know that, for that matter. So if I'm having you deliver food, I indicate the tip. The custom is not 20%, it's $1 a mile. And if you don't tip enough, the food might not even arrive at all. Hey, it's sunny in Elmwood Park. It's probably headed your way, John. Plenty of sunshine downtown Milwaukee, said another. Let me look over my shoulder again. Still cloudy downtown Chicago. Hey, you know how we were talking about in our Mega Monday morning quiz that one of the clues was that you had to guess who the politician is, that this Illinois senator appeared on Saturday Night Live with a politician of the same name. Of course, that's Paul Simon. I don't remember him being on there, but we did find it.
This is very embarrassing, and I was sure that they meant me.
I just assumed they wanted me, Paul Simon, the senator.
Well, it's a comedy show, and it's a music show, so it's got to be me. I mean, who else is it?
I guess I just wish somebody had told me earlier. I've been rehearsing since Thursday here.
It gets very hectic here, and you can get lost in the shuffle.
I understand, like New Hampshire.
Paul Simon, the late great senator from downstate Illinois. Down the hall we go. Ji Suki is getting ready with the business lunch. What's going on your way, Ji?
Happy Monday, John.
Likewise.
We're talking about Valentine's Day. Did you know that the average consumer plans to spend around $196.31 making sure their sweeties feel loved this Friday?
Trying to think of what I've got in mind.
I know.
I don't know that I'm going to meet the threshold. That's the average, too, huh?
That's the average. Now, is it just your wife that you think about, or then do you also think about your children? Do you think about your producer, Elif? Like, what do you do? Who do you buy Valentine's for?
I think the question for me would be more my mom, because my mom is still alive.
Okay.
So then Brenda said, well, we should get something for your mom, which really isn't Brenda's job. That's my job.
Mm-hmm.
I get something for Brenda less this year. And then but that's my dad's job. My dad's alive. So I'm not getting, no, it's just me and Brenda.
Okay.
Final answer.
So you need to spend $196.31.
Not going to happen. All right. So that's one of your topics today, right?
Absolutely.